America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Elogi. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hey. Hello.
Yeah, so this episode is going to be for July 12th, 2019, and holy shit, did some serious shit go down this week. And I mean that in the fact that normally shit goes down pretty much every week, but the shit that went down this week is pretty exceptional.
Yeah.
Basically, one of the assholiest of rich assholes is hopefully finally getting his comeuppance this week, because probably one of the most infamous child sex traffickers slash billionaires basically got his ass arrested, and he is charged with sex trafficking of minors. And the reason this is a big deal is because, well, for one thing, our now former Secretary of Labor is the guy that more or less got him a sweetheart plea deal when he first got charged for this shit. Second of all, he's got links to some very powerful people, including our current president.
On both sides, for
yeah, and former president as well.
Like he's been a longtime donor for people on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, nobody's going to get out of this looking good.
Nope. Yeah. And boy, is it gonna? You know, they've got the records and they're unsealing them as we speak. So when the full swath of awfulness that this guy's involved in is revealed to the world, it's going to probably be something equal to like the shit that happened with the Panama Papers. Because this guy helped a lot of very powerful people, did lots of very scared little girls. Hmm. So, yeah. But other than that, we got some other stuff. We got some celebrity deaths we got to talk about. R. Kelly is in the shit again. For the
exact reason. Point where we just assume that he's in some kind of legal trouble at any given time.
And for this reason, it's exactly why you think it is.
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell has a very serious challenger to his seat coming up for the next election. The governor of Tennessee did a day to honor probably one of, if not the most infamous figures of the old Confederacy, mostly because his awfulness extends outside of the Confederacy's existence, and we'll tell you why. Also, Mississippi is made up of assholes, and this we're also going to tell you why.
This is not news.
This is not. And then we got a bunch of entertainment and Netflix news, shit like that. And yeah, that's just about it. So with that out of the way, we need to start off the show as always. So start us off, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I have been eagerly awaiting the release of the fourth book of the Legends of the First Empire series by Michael J. Sullivan. That came out this week, and I just got my hands on it and I started it. I really like this series because the whole premise is just kind of interesting, where imagine like a society of primitive people who like look up to elves as gods and then eventually figure out that they're actually not, because one of them manages to kill one. So the ramifications of that permeate through the whole series, but then there's the fact that the elves themselves are kind of dicks. They look at humans like, you know, barely animals. So, and, you know, since they're long-lived, they don't really do very much. Meanwhile, the humans have, like, advanced several generations in technology. You can see where this is going. Bad things happen.
Mm-hmm.
In the fourth book, it would basically, we'll start off right after the big battle where the elves got their asses kicked. Not a spoiler. I mean, we know this is going to happen because, yeah. But anyway, so I've been very much enjoying that. His writing style is very, very eloquent without being too difficult to follow.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very nice. So I'm waiting for that. And then after, I'll probably pick up the new Dennis E. Taylor novel that, mm-hmm. that came out a few, a couple of weeks ago. So pick that up. Apart from that, well, I've still been playing Bloodstained. Damn great game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Some really, really weird shit in that game, I'm noticing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of that's probably due to, I'm just going to say it, the Kickstarter backers.
Yeah.
Who managed to, get their pets into the game, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And themselves.
Yeah, I wondered if those portraits were backers.
Yep.
They are.
Yeah, so the ones
Most of them are. Some of them are also just...
Yeah, some of them are original, but yeah, a lot of the ones...
And some of them are, backers. The developers as well.
Yep. So, yeah, that's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Other than that, this week was AMD's launch of the new Ryzen processor, so I've been watching tech sites melt down to puddles trying to cover it. AMD thought it was a great idea to launch 8 CPUs and 3 graphics cards on the same day.
As you do.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I was on Sunday watching Gamers Nexus release video after video and looking at Steve as he's getting more and more exhausted until the late Sunday evening where he releases his video and he's like, I think I'm actually going to die now.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he literally said. Apparently he hadn't slept in the last 72 hours. That's
not good.
No.
Yeah, that's your mind starts doing shit to you when that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's there doing his video and he's like, shit, the battery in my wireless mic is about to die. Okay, let's just switch to the camera microphone because I'm not dealing with this today. You just completely no fucks given by that point. Yeah, so that's been a lot of fun. Great processors. The video cards, pretty good too. Especially after the price drop. I should point that out. But I actually think I figured out AMD's evil plan for this. Yeah, I think the idea was that if they inundate all of the reviewers, it will kill them. And so after all of the positive reviews... then there won't be any reviewers left to review the Intel parts. that's kind of out there, but just saying. Looking at those Ryzen parts, and it's like, well, they're damn good. I'll give them that. Maybe I'll Christmas present. I'll look at upgrading. Because I can, unlike Intel, I don't actually have to change my motherboard to put one in. So that's nice. But apart from that, that's kind of been it for me. How about you, Pat?
Shadowbringers, of course.
Hmm.
Working on getting all my characters caught up after having finally finished the main scenario quest on the first one. Other than that, I've been settling into a new role at work that... has dominated a lot of my energy, but I'm really looking forward to once it gets into full swing. There was a Bad Religion show here in Utah on Wednesday I didn't get to go to, so I've been making up for it all week by basically pummeling myself with their catalog on my work computer. So that's been fun. I'm still salty. And other than that, I'm just kind of preparing to do more stuff with my YouTube channel and working out what. So I'm going to be doing some fighting game stuff. I'm going to be doing some hockey stuff, Final Fantasy 14. Maybe I'll go back to general gaming commentary. We'll see. Right now I'm definitely keeping busy.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
So, yeah, that's been my week.
All right, Teresa, what about you?
I've been listening to the Babaverse audiobooks.
Aren't they great?
Oh my god. Can't get enough of them. We're almost at the end of number two. So we just chewed through those really, really fast. And I would be done if I were listening, you know, with the other two. So yeah, love it. Love the entire premise of it. Definitely interesting where it's going. And yeah, there's only three released right now, right?
Yeah, it's a trilogy, and he's got a couple of standalone books after that. The Singularity Trap.
Okay, so it wraps. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, glad that we finally got around to that. And we've been watching Good Omens. We're about halfway through with that. That is just spectacular. Love it. Love everything about it. And I never did get past the first chapter on reading that book. I tried and tried and tried and just never found time. So I'm interested to see how it differs from the little mini series we have here. And then I've been watching Strawberry Panic and just kind of cringe laugh most of the time. I'm just like,
oh, wow. Yeah. Strawberry Panic is like one of the most, it is one of the cringiest old school, you know, shoujo-ai type stories. It's so fucking stupid.
It is. It really is. And of course, been playing Shadowbringers, kind of having a hard time wrapping my head around my usual sequence now for attacking for Summoner. And I'm like,
Summoner changed a lot.
It really did. It really did. And so I was looking into it and I was watching some videos with other people's sequences. You know, they're kind of standard. And I really fell into a rut with Summoner before, where I was doing pretty much the same damn thing all the time. But it wasn't horrible.
You weren't using the pet hotbars either.
No, I certainly wasn't. And now I'm trying to add that in there because, you know, it kind of made me a shitty summoner because I wasn't doing my pet shit. And now I'm trying to do my pet shit and I'm like, oh, I need to stop playing with a controller and start playing with a keyboard because I seriously need about four of the 10 sequence long bars across the bottom or however many it is. And that's a little bit of a problem because I really prefer playing with a controller.
Well, you know about double cross hotbar, right?
Yeah, and I'm going to have to start doing it, I think, because just switching between, because right now I have five actives that I switch between, and that's too much. I mean, it's too much. One of them I usually don't use when I'm in battle, but it's freaking unbelievable. So yeah, I was looking at what do I need to do? And then I picked up Stardew Valley and started playing again. And I've done 22 hours of that in the past 36 hours, so you can see exactly what I've been doing. A whole lot of sitting on the couch playing Stardew Valley.
Well.
Yep. And then I also picked up Animal Crossing Pocket Camp again, because there's a Sanrio thing going on for like the next 2 months, so I'll do that until I get sick of it. And yeah, maybe tomorrow. So that's about it for me. What have you been up to, Chris?
Trying to enjoy the last bit of good weather we're going to have, because it's going to go in the 90s for the next week or so after today.
Yeah.
Today was like 78, 79. Real nice. And tomorrow's going to be 89. It's like, all right. Yep. Shit's going down.
Yep.
Yeah, so earlier this week I went and saw Spider-Man Far From Home, which was really good. Does a good job of kind of following up with what happened in Endgame. Some really great stuff that happens at the beginning as they sort of deal with the ramifications of, hey, what if half of the population of Earth disappeared for 5 years and then came back? How do you integrate them back with society, with their former peers that are 5 years older now? That sort of thing. Like, and in the context of that being with the school, where I think they had a good number of people that's disappeared. So they, I guess, they kind of joke that they're getting screwed because they, I guess the disappearance happened like later in the school year, so they have to start over. at the beginning of the year. So they are essentially like redoing their senior year or whatever these kids are doing. And if you know what Mysterio is, you can probably guess how things go. And the post-credit scenes set up some really cool stuff for Spider-Man and some other things that are going on in the MCU. People should definitely check it out. Let's see. I also finished Stranger Things Season 3, which was really good, especially the finale episode. They do some stuff in there that's kind of ridiculously crazy, but also really fun. And yeah, it kind of ends really well in a way that this is kind of like an end of a trilogy, in a sense, so that they can kind of put this particular like bad guy sort of thing to bed and maybe come up with something new for season 4 and maybe set that a few years in the future so that they can sort of realign it with the age of the kids.
Yeah.
'Cause I think they're about a year or so older than their characters, which is a little bit weird. But yeah, they do a lot of good stuff there. And Teresa, definitely do not watch this with the kids around. Because people get turned into like human goo, like bones and blood and gore and all that.
Yeah, we could skip that for a little bit.
Yeah,
for about another year, probably. Yeah, and it's all good.
Rats and humans get that treatment.
Yeah, poor rats.
Yep. Because like the whole thing here is the mind flayers like taking them over. As the kids continue to put these things into D&D terms,
yeah,
for their own sakes, which let's see, been doing lots of streaming. Sunday I streamed my time at Portia, the Xbox One version, which was pretty good. Definitely has a little bit of just some like polish issues, but it works out pretty well as like a Stardew, like a 3D Stardew clone kind of thing. Especially once I started learning more about what different materials are, what they use them for. I went through like a fishing contest, which I did not have enough lures. Did not have the time to go collect more. But it goes for like 2 days, I think. Mm-hmm. So the next day I made sure I went to the farm that sells the worms for the fishing stuff and bought shit tons of them ahead of time. And that's a pretty cool game. Let's see, I also streamed Stardew Valley because I was like, all right, I played some of my time at Portia, I need to go back and check out what the original is mimicking. That was a lot of fun, especially kind of doing the same thing, pulling out a wiki and be like, all right, what is this person like? Because I think I got to the point where I had Pam's birthday show up during the stream. So I was like, what the hell does she want?
Well, you can brew her some ale. She really likes that.
I think I gave her a turnip. I had some turnips. And it's like, oh, everybody likes turnips, I guess. I had a few of those. And I kept having it tell me, like, oh, you're going to get bad luck. And it seemed like it turned some of my crops brown. But then after a good day of rain, it was all of them bloomed. So I got all this stuff, so it didn't seem to be too much of an issue.
You're not watering every day?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, okay.
But if it's raining, I'm not going to bother because it's already getting water.
No.
But it was just saying, like, bad luck, the fortune-telling thing.
Yeah.
So, like, it seemed like some of my crops decided that they're going to act like they're going to die. Huh. But they ultimately didn't. So that was just weird. But, yeah, that's pretty good. I finally built the fucking bridge to get over to the other side of the beach. Because I had never fucking done that. And this save was pretty early still. It was like the first couple weeks of the save. So, but just how I played that game enough, I was like, that's too much. 300 wood. And it's like, no, it isn't. I have fucking 200 here in my chest. So I need to just man up and get the rest of the chop down some more trees in my yard, get that wood. Then somehow some of it disappeared. I don't know what I used it for. I think maybe to make chests, because I didn't have enough room for all the crap I had. I got to run all the way back, get that, then go all the way back and build it. I was like, all right, there's like four things here. All right, we're done. That was fun. I definitely want to put some more time into it. Trying to get some of the community center stuff for the fishing,
mm-hmm.
Which is annoying because it's like, oh, I just need, you know, this thing that's only in the ocean area from like 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. And it's like, all right, it's 4 p.m. I'm going to start fishing for this. It's like, God damn it, can't get any of it. That sort of thing. I had something for the museum, a walking stick. And I fucking accidentally gave it to somebody because I happened to be holding it when I went to talk to them. That fucking pissed me off. It's like, God damn it. I can't even just say, like, hey, sorry, man. I didn't mean to give you that. Can I have it back? No. They're assholes. That was a fun time. Played some Rocket League on Wednesday, which was a lot of fun. Played some of the new Radical Summer stuff. Because there's a new mode for this section, which in Rumble mode, there is one of the power-ups. Essentially puts a bunch of spikes on your car, and so if the ball hits you, it sticks to your car. You can kind of drive at the goal to get it in there for an easy goal. This is a mode that it's all just that. Everybody has spikes. And when you get the ball attached to you, you lose all your boost. You can't get any more boost. So essentially you're kind of gimmicked into like having to either drive up the wall and get some air that way or do what I do, which is just jump constantly trying to avoid everybody that's trying to come after you, which leads to some fun moments. And I think on the stream we even had a moment where we were down 7-6, like final seconds. And the fun thing, since the ball gets stuck to your car, it doesn't technically touch the ground. So the other team just had the ball. They were staying in front of our goal, like taunting us. Then one of their other people ran into him, took the ball out of the goal. We stole it and somehow managed to score to tie it up for overtime. And then we won in overtime. It's like, all right, that's fucking Rocket League right there. These assholes had the win. All they did was drive in a stupid goal, and they decided to screw around. And we ended up winning. This is the ultimate comeuppance for the showboating. That stream was pretty good because somebody showed up in the chat who gave me some tips for changing the camera up a bit so that it kind of gives you more a wider field of view, so it's not so narrow, which I didn't really pay too much attention to before. Then he ended up hopping on to play with me for a bit,
mm-hmm.
which was pretty cool. He was like giving me tips for how to get better at the game, with just those basic like camera things as being like the first thing, trying to get used to that. So he played some 2v2 and ended up winning, I think, almost every game.
Cool.
He was really good too. So that was a nice, fun surprise. And yesterday we played the Messenger, because it's on sale and everything. Because the new update that adds new levels is out now. That's a really fun game. It's inspired by the original Ninja Gaiden, but it's also self-aware, very self-aware, because like you meet this merchant that is housed in this shop that's in like another dimension, and so he offers you advice and lets you get upgrades and such, but he also go try and mess with this cabinet he has. He's like, no, that you're not going to get in that cabinet. You keep messing with it. He's like, you keep doing that, so I'm going to tell you a really boring story, and you're not going to be able to skip through it. You keep messing with it. And he's like, all right, he just goes through this story really slowly, sort of thing. And once he gets to the end, he's like, yeah, I bet you regret doing that now, don't you? Sort of thing. And yeah, he also has some stories that he tells you along the way, which involves your guy like just not caring about like the moral of the story. So he gets to the point, he's like, well, you just seem to ignore whatever's message I'm trying to tell you through these stories, so I'm not going to tell you anymore. Or he gets to a point where he tells you like a story that's about you being an annoying jerk who doesn't pay attention to anything. sort of thing, and it's real fun with that sort of stuff. Mm. As your guy is like the guy who like guesses that everything's just going to be cliched and all that. Yeah, there's like a fun bit where usually you meet him before you go to the boss fight, and so you can ask him like, hey, what's up with this guy? Any tips? And you get to this one area it's like, oh, this is going to be like a vacation for you. It's the easiest area in the game. Sort of thing, and you get to the boss where the boss area normally is like, oh yeah, there's no boss here. I told you it was gonna be like a vacation. So enjoy this. I'm like, this guy's bullshitting me. So I'm gonna go over to the area of the boss, there's nothing there. You get through it and it's like, okay, there's nothing. Okay, that guy was right. He wasn't fucking lying about that. I know what the twist is with the guy, I'm not gonna say it, but there's a lot of cool parts of that game, and I've gotten some really nice abilities where they give you so you're like a clan of ninjas that are themed around like squirrels. Mm-hmm. So you get like this like wingsuit that you can wear so you can glide, sort of have that sort of way to get longer jumps out of it, as well as like running up areas where there's lots of wind sort of stuff. Then I also got like a what he calls a dart rope, which is like, I know you're just going to call it a grappling hook, but it's called a dart rope. Just call it whatever you want, sort of thing. And that lets you kind of cling to walls more easily from a distance. You can use it to grab on enemies to zip over to and do a quick attack on them, as well as like there are some ropes and some other stuff that you can attach to. It doesn't let you swing. It's just like a horizontal, like quick jump. Through areas, so like that whole area is centered around those sort of quick, tight jumps. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that game's a lot of fun. I didn't get to the point where it opens up because it turns into like a Metroid-like at a certain point from the very linear game that it is right now. But yeah, that game's a lot of fun. It's on sale for like $13 now. So people definitely should check that out if they are interested. Mm. And tomorrow we're going to be playing They Are Billions, which is a new game that just came out. It's a survival RTS featuring zombies. Hmm. And I wanted to stream it earlier, but playing it with a controller, it works fine. I don't think they did a great job of adapting it for a controller because they make it work like... they don't really do a great job of making it work for a controller. But on PS4 and I assume Xbox One, it supports mouse and keyboard. So I was like trying to figure out how to get that to work on my PS4. So I like plugged in the little receiver I have for my PC and mouse I have right now. It's like an all-in-one thing. And it recognizes the mouse but not the keyboard, which I read that was an issue. Like, it doesn't work too well with those kinds of things like that. So essentially I just got a Bluetooth mouse that I'm going to use to attach to the PS4. Then I have a keyboard that I also, a USB keyboard that I'm just going to have to move the PS4 over so it's not too long. Which that keyboard I had when I played Final Fantasy XI on PS2 back in the day. So it's an old USB keyboard, but it still works fine on the PS4. Because it's just like a condensed keyboard, essentially.
Yeah.
Which should work fine for that game.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the controller, the way that stuff works is like you hit square to bring up the menu. So like just to move guys around or do different things with a group of guys you have for taking out zombies and such. It was like a little bit too tedious for what I liked. You can kind of use like, there's supposed to be a way like to separate people into groups. So you have like, oh, this is my group is going to be over here. I think it's like 8 groups total. But it's all kind of set up in a way that works like a traditional like PC RTS where like the bottom like 10% of the screen is this like HUD that you mess with. And like you can actually mess with that and the controller and all that.
Mm-hmm.
In a weird way that it just doesn't kind of work as well as I would like. So I'm just going to try this mouse and keyboard thing and see how that goes because that'll be a pretty fun thing to do. And so yeah, that'll be our stream on Saturday, which would be nice to do. And I think that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
All Oh, first and foremost, I have 100%ed Bloodstained, which is literally like the first game I've 100%ed in like 15 years.
Nice. It's like Symphony Night. Is that like half the game?
No, that's actual 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. So I did finally, you know, I obviously, since I 100%ed it, I beat finally all of the bosses, including OD, who's probably the hardest boss fight of all of them in that game. Even Bale, who is like the canon final boss of that game, does not compare. Mostly because he has Zawarudo as one of his abilities, where he can basically just freeze time and then make a bunch of little icicles and then shoot them at you.
Yeah.
In fact, now that I think about it, I'm pretty sure it's a JoJo reference.
Probably.
Because, I mean, there's a lot of references to a lot of things in that game, and, well, the time periods match up.
Yeah.
And, of course, I did fight the dude at the 8-bit nightmare segment. Once I got up in level, he wasn't nearly as hard as he was the first time I fought him.
Yeah.
Because, like, I definitely say if you're going to do that, I would recommend going through the main game first and, you know, getting, you know, trying to beat the other three additional bosses, the three optional bosses, and then fighting, you know, Dominique and Bale, and then going to fight them. It is much easier.
Yeah.
Mostly because all of those monsters that you fight in the 8-bit nightmare actually have a really, like a really high hit point count.
Hmm.
And also, they don't operate really on the same rules as a lot of the other monsters in the game do, because they don't have the they don't back off when you hit them.
Yeah,
they're literally like old school Castlevania enemies until you. But yeah, so I actually 100%ed that game. I really hope Igarashi and his crew are very proud of what they've done, because holy crap, they pulled off something amazing.
Yeah, and they're not done.
No, they aren't. There is still another DLC that's coming. I would not be surprised if there's like another one of those Curse of the Moon style games coming soon. Mm. And probably more stuff to add to it as well. We know they raised a pretty penny for the Kickstarter, so there's probably still more stuff coming with it.
Yep.
But yeah, so that game is really good. I heavily recommend it. Anybody who is desperately wanting that kind of game back, because this is probably the closest to a Castlevania game you're going to be getting in a while.
Yeah.
Unless
Konami gets their heads out of their asses and does something.
Yeah.
For now. That's what
they're at least active now.
Hoshi's daughter gets pulled out of the soap land. But anyway. But, yeah, so, you know, it's still got like 2 weeks until Fire Emblem Three Houses comes out, so I got to find out what I'm going to do in the meantime. But yeah, so other than that, Netflix, I'm pretty well through Evangelion now. God damn, that show gets weird fast. the show is already kind of weird starting off when you see like the monster designs they do for the angels, because that shit's already pretty weird on its own.
Uh-huh.
But then once the like other shit starts coming about, like finding out that the Ava robots aren't actually, you know, robots, they're actually alive.
Yep.
And that in hindsight, you know, Shinji and Asuka and Rei really aren't necessary for them to function, actually. All this other awful shit that goes with it. And you kind of realize just how much of a bastard Gendo Akari really is.
Yeah.
I mean, God, what an asshole. But yeah, so, you know, stuff really starts to get serious in that show around, like, okay, so, like, for the first 12 episodes of that show, it's a fairly I want to say fairly standard mecha anime. I mean, it's already pretty good because, I mean, it's Gainax and, you know, they tend to put all of the money into the excess if they can for like the first few episodes. And then, of course, as usually the case, they end up running out of money and then they have to improvise. But like, yeah, so like that's kind of like the sort of secret that's not a secret about Evangelion. When they start getting like really avant-garde and artsy towards the end, it was mostly out of necessity because they'd more or less run out of money towards that point of the production. And also there was, it had a lot of issues with like dealing with like the television censors. And like it got like its time slot got switched around a couple times. Mm-hmm. So overall, it you know, part of the reason it's so like all over the place is, well, kind of because its target demographic was kind of all over the place. Oh yeah, and then there's, you know, Hideaki Anno having his little mental breakdown midway through the show's production, and that reflects heavily towards the end of the show. I have never seen End of Evangelion, although I do know how it kind of ends. I know it's basically, well, you can probably guess from the title alone, but
yeah,
we all know. You know,
I have the DVD, so
yeah, it's so one thing I will say is anybody who is complaining about the fact that, you know, this doesn't have the original English dub can go get fucked, because the original English dub sucked. I mean, I'm sorry, it did. You know, we thought it was awesome at the time because it was the only thing we had, but considering the new people they have, it kind of shows just how terrible it actually was. Subpar, even.
Hmm.
Sorry, Spike Spencer, but...
yeah, a lot of anime back in that time was pretty badly dubbed.
Yeah, but... for some reason, Spike Spencer, he brought to the character an excessive bit of whininess that kind of made the show hard to watch at times.
Yeah.
Now,
the cast they surrounded him with, I will swear by them.
Honestly. Yeah. But the people they've got now, it's just better. Yeah. It's more natural. It doesn't seem as forced. You know, there isn't all of the Woolsey-ism shit that you see in it. You know, Asuka doesn't have all of the random German as she did in the original dub. I mean, she still speaks German in it because, you know, she's from Germany, but, you know, she keeps it to a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, she isn't random. Mein Gott, wunderbar, and all that shit.
did they keep the whole part where Shinji's in the back and she's yelling at
him? Oh, yeah, she does. Yeah, that's still there. And then, you know, he's like a Wiener Schnitzel, you know.
With what very little German he knows.
Yeah, she's like, fuck it, turn it over to Japanese. But yeah. One of the things about this show, watching it on Netflix especially, is I also kind of figured out why, you know, what the wear and tear comes from the type of licensing hell that show was kept in for so many years. Some of the footage is definitely not up to par. I mean, it's rare, but you can tell that some of the original footage they use hasn't aged very well because it's rather fuzzy. Again, it's not really their fault because, again, with the type of shit that show's been through, you know, and like it changing hands so many times, it's, you know, some shit was liable to fall by the wayside. There's just no other way. It was bound to happen. Yeah. But it is noticeable. I mean, it's not so noticeable that, you know, it scars the whole show, but every so often you'll see, you know, it'll change scene and the footage will take a noticeable dive in quality.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, also a lot of people figure out, yeah, the Fly Me to the Moon. Yeah, it's not in the English credit sequence. It's on the Japanese credit sequence, though.
Go for it.
Yeah, so if you do the
Japanese...
Now
I need that one explained to me.
Oh, it's a licensing issue.
Of course it is.
Yeah, because I guess, you know, the people who, you know, Japanese, they have the license for that song, but, you know, because Fly Me to the Moon is originally an English song, right? Uh-huh. And, you know, just the way copyright shit works between the two countries is convoluted.
In Japanese, they have it in perpetuity, but for English dub purposes, they have to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's bullshit. You know, there's been people petitioning now to, like, can you guys, like, not figure the licensing shit out so we can have this as part of the show? Because it's kind of a part of the experience, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to maybe finishing that up tonight and then, you know, watching End of Evangelion, which, of course, is a full-length feature film. So
it's a full-length feature film, but it's also a replacement for the last two episodes.
Well,
it's presented as episodes.
Yeah, basically what people what I've been told is that the stuff that you see in the last two parts of the last two episodes of the series is basically the shit that's going on in Shinji's head while the events in End of Evangelion are taking place.
Yep.
Because, you know, it's him coming to terms with the Human Instrumentality Project and all that shit, which is, like, purely psychological in and of itself. But, yeah. Other than that, books. Books as usual. I went to the used bookstore, and somebody dropped off, like, a whole bunch of these old... Okay, so, quick little... sort of side story. Everybody knows that when L. Ron Hubbard, before he started up the Church of Scientology, he wrote for the sci-fi pulps, right?
Yeah.
Well, of course, he didn't just write for the sci-fi pulps. He wrote for the pulps in general, and he wrote a lot. Mm-hmm. I do mean a lot. So sometime around, I think it was 2011, Galaxy Publishing, which is like the fiction publishing arm of the Church of Scientology organization, started putting out this series called the Golden Age series. And what it is it's these about 120, 130 page paperback books that basically like thematically collect a couple of Hubbard's original fiction that he published for the pulp magazines. And what they managed to do is they tracked down these magazines, and they actually like not only reproduced the original text, but they also reproduced the original illustrations that were in the magazines for them. Mm-hmm. And since, you know, Scientology and they have more money than God, it means that they were able to put the full might of the Scientology organization behind this endeavor. So I ended up getting a couple of these at the used bookstore, and for anybody who's curious, I always buy all of Hubbard's books secondhand.
Yes.
So that I never end up contributing a cent to the Scientology organization.
Oh, hell no.
One of them's called Beyond All Weapons, and the other one is called The Great Secret. Both of them are science fiction based, and they're stuff he published for magazines like Astounding Science Fiction, Planet Stories, Amazing, stuff like that. And you do kind of notice like a formula with the way he writes. And one of them is that if you've ever, and I consider myself something of a Hubbard connoisseur, as it were. One of the things about Hubbard's writing career is he got into the science fiction game kind of late in his career. He'd already sort of established himself writing for like the adventure magazines like Argosy and, you know, stuff like that. And he was sort of brought in specifically by the publishers of Astounding Science Fiction because they wanted to bring in people who weren't so focused on the technical details. And for those of you who don't know, at the time, Astounding was being edited by a guy who's kind of like legendary and slash infamous in the science fiction world, a guy named Jack W. Campbell. He's the guy who introduced people like Isaac Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke, Robert Heinlein, the Golden Age, as it were. And He that was like his thing. It had to be like serious technical detail. The more technical and more hard-edged as far as the science was concerned, the better. And basically his publishers went over his head and was like, look, dude, you need to get some more human elements into this stuff because this shit's starting to read like a technical manual. And of course, that's sort of where Hubbard came in. His agent recommended him to these publishers, and that's why he started writing for Astounding. And it's also the reason why Dianetics was first published in Astounding Science Fiction. Just FYI. But the thing is, if you read a lot of, and not all of it, I want to make this clear, not all of Hubbard's science fiction is like this, because he did have the hard edge type stories as well. Some of them actually quite good, I might add. But a lot of his stories are basically like just standard adventure stories where the space and sci-fi stuff is kind of plastered in after the fact. There's lots of like gunfights on Venus. You know what I'm saying?
That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was 1930s, 1940s.
Yeah.
So that was still in the realm of possibility back then. But anyway, yeah, so I got that a couple of those. What else? Oh, yeah, summer. It's hot. And I hate it. And I want fall to get here quick. And we're not even into August yet.
Yeah, we still have the brunt of summer and then asshole summer to look forward to. So
yeah, asshole summer. That's a very specific phenomenon that happens here down south. Because for whatever reason, summer has its going away party, you know, and it's like, bye, I'm gone. And then, you know, fall's got its welcome party, and then summer shows up drunk and won't leave.
Yep.
At least not until early October.
Yep.
If that. But, yeah, and of course, since this is the south, that means we get the weird bullshit weather, like the sun showers.
Yeah.
You know what a sun shower is?
Unfortunately.
A sun shower is what happens when the sun is shining, but there's just enough moisture and dark clouds in the air that you get a downpour.
Yep.
And that was especially fun for my dad, who was out cutting grass with the sun shining, and then suddenly he's pelted with hot rain.
That's how you get swamp ass.
Yeah. But anyway. Hey, all right, so anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
No.
All right. Well, then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Bractoid. So this week, and we'll be talking about him because he's our asshole of the week, a very egregious and awful individual was arrested on some very egregious and awful charges. The type of charges that will get you murdered in prison.
Yep.
And if you know anybody who knows enough about the American prison system, or maybe, you know, has actually been to prison at one time or another, which I hate to say it, but there's a couple of folks in my family who fall into that latter category. You'll know, you know, this is the type of crime that usually results in, you know, this dude getting strangled in the shower or shanked. You know, during lunchtime in the cafeteria.
Or accidentally thrown out a window.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, we live in a sort of a relatively more civilized society, or at least we like to think we are. And we have ideas of, like, what's considered cruel and unusual punishment, right? Even for, like, the worst crimes we can think of, you know, we have, at least in the United States still, we have capital punishment. And in there, we still try to find ways to make it as relatively painless as possible, although, as recent studies have shown, it's not quite as painless as we think it is, and it's mostly just to make us feel better. But back in the old days, that wasn't really the case, and especially like during the medieval period. Now, the type of crimes that Epstein is accused of are the kind that kind of makes you want to bring back some of this shit.
Yeah.
Because he's a horrible person, and he needs to feel at least a modicum amount of the pain that he caused these poor people. But some of it could be especially – well, I'll put it this way. So back in the medieval days, what was considered to be like the highest crime that you could commit?
Heresy.
Well, really, I mean like higher, like secular crime.
Adultery.
But, you know, murder, I would think.
Murder was pretty bad.
There's high treason against the crown.
Ah, yes.
Of course.
Because the king was considered to be God's appointed lawgiver on earth, you know, the divine right of kings and all that stuff. So to try and overthrow or in any way harm the person of the king, or to go against the king's justice or the king's laws, was basically considered to be going against God and the church, and therefore was considered to be liable for the most awful and humiliating punishment you can think of. And that's why in England they came up with a little thing known as hanging, drawing, and quartering. Do you know what hanging, drawing, and quartering is?
Unfortunately. I think we've all seen Braveheart.
All right, so what happens when a person is going to be hanged, drawn, and quartered? Well, first, after their sentence, they stay in the dungeon for a few days. They may be given the chance to go and, you know, have confession. Sometimes not, depending on the type of individual it was. And after that, what would happen is they would then be attached to a wooden hurdle, which was then tied to the back of a horse, and they would be drawn to the place of execution. Now, drawn in this sense actually has two meanings here, and you're going to find out what the second one is in just a second. All right, so then you're taken, okay? Then you're stripped of your clothes, and then you're hanged. Now, this isn't like the type of hanged where, you know, you got like a chair or a stool or maybe a trap door under you so that, you know, you fall down and it goes snap.
Yeah, that'd get it over with.
No, this is just strangling. So you're basically hanging there by a rope, dangling around, you know, those really awful choking noises.
Yeah,
probably pissing yourself once or twice. And then just as you pass out and you hope the sweet release of death is about to come upon you, they cut you down.
Yep.
So you fall back down on the ground, and then they resuscitate you. And then you come back to life. You're like, oh God, now what? What could possibly happen now? Well, then they lead you up a ladder. Okay? It's high up. And then they tie you to that ladder. Then the executioner, he gets his own ladder and up next to you. And then he climbs up it. Okay? And then he takes out a knife and then he cuts you open. That's not the first thing he does. You know what the first thing he actually does is? Because you see, up at this point, as this is happening, they've built a little bonfire down on the ground. There's a reason it's there.
Yep.
It's not for warmth. So the dude, he takes his knife, and he cuts off your bean franks. Just like that. Just... And then he throws it into the fire.
I mean, they're not going to be needing them, so...
No. And keep in mind, they're still alive during all of this.
Yeah.
And then after that... They decide, okay, that's done. Now what are we going to do? Let's cut him open. So like a fish or a hog or whatever, they take a big, you know, knife and they literally just gut you from neck to groin. Then they take a little stick and then they take the end of your large intestine and they wrap it around the stick and then they slowly draw out the length of your intestines. Just oh so slowly in front of you, so you were watching the whole thing.
Ain't that a bitch?
Oh yeah. And then finally, when that's done, they throw that in the fire. And then they take you off the ladder, you fall down back to the ground with your guts spilling out onto the ground, and then finally, mercifully, they behead you. Just take a big old axe and then they behead you. But keep in mind, this is the age before the guillotine. And if you've ever heard about what beheadings used to go, you know, it usually doesn't happen in just one chop.
Yeah.
It might take a 3 or 4 before the head's finally severed from the neck. And then after that, they then quarter you. What does it mean to be quartered? It means they chop you into 4 pieces. And then what they would do is they would take those four pieces, and they would take them, and they would display them at the four cardinal points of the kingdom as a warning to anyone who would go. As for your head, well, they usually put it on a spike and then would place it on top of the London Bridge so that anybody who's crossing the London Bridge into the city of London would know what happens when you fuck with the big king.
Yeah.
And for those of you who are wondering, how late did they keep doing this? It wasn't officially abolished until 1870.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that they kept doing this well up into 1870, because around the time the 18th century came about, you suddenly had Enlightenment philosophy come about, and suddenly people started questioning the morality of this kind of treatment towards someone committing a secular crime. And eventually, everybody decided, you know what, it'd probably just be simpler if we just cut head off. And eventually, they just completely abolished the practice altogether in 1870. Hmm. And then, of course, the death penalty for treason was abolished permanently in 1998. And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Yep.
Alrighty, then.
Or a really bad day in medieval times.
Yeah.
Execution.
Yes. Speaking of people we want hung, drawn, and quartered, we start, as always, with the show proper. And as always, we start with our asshole of the week. And our asshole of the week is none other than Jeffrey Epstein, who this week was arrested for the second time and charged with trafficking of minors between the years 2002 and 2005. Now, keep in mind, that isn't exclusively to when his sex traffic was focused on. He's been doing this for a long time. It's just that those are the 3 years that they can specifically get evidence.
Yeah.
And some. So, yeah, do we really need to say who Jeffrey Epstein
is? It might help.
He's basically, yeah, he's a really, like, very rich, like, yeah, he's a very rich stockbroker who basically has more money than anybody knows what to do with. So much so that he actually has his own private island in the Caribbean. And he has a massive, like, 70-plus room mansion where a lot of this shit happens.
We now know what it's for. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. Basically, he would prey on girls who were, you know, runaways, or they were in, like, a bad, like, you know, they were in a bad situation overall. Made them easy to ply, and then he would molest them. He would whore them out to people. Eventually, he would just sell them to into prostitution, period. And the reason this is significant is because on top of how unbelievably prolific he was with this crime, he had a lot of major connections with some very powerful people, including current President Donald Trump, former President Bill Clinton, probably Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, I'd be shocked if it wasn't.
A lot of, like, the big movers and pushers that you can think of,
yeah,
have been to his private parties or his infamous whore jet at least once or twice. So Chris, you want to take over from here?
Yeah. So they, like, raided his New York home,
mm-hmm.
And basically found pictures, pretty easily, I believe.
Yeah. They were on, like, compact disc that I think he'd locked in a safe somewhere.
Yeah, it's – he was not – if he really wanted to keep it secret, he was not doing due diligence for that, clearly. Especially with the amount of money he has. He could secure that stuff in a place like, say, outside of the house. Not just keep it on hand because I don't know what he does with it. I don't want to think about it. But yeah, they finally picked him up again. After sort of getting the plea deal about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're going to, by the way, we're going to talk about how and why he got it in just a little bit.
Yeah.
But continue.
Yeah. So they had statements from, like, the Clintons.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. They have not seen him in a very long time, 10 years at least. Yeah. Detailing, like, their encounters with him.
Mm-hmm.
Some stuff like that. But yeah, the this also kind of just seems like going back over this shit that happened because a lot of people fucked up at the last investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a sec, but yeah, let's see. Not sure what else. We're still kind of in the middle of them building the case, getting all that settled. So we'll probably talk a bit more later on once they start actually getting all that down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it seems like as long as nothing shitty happens, he should be going away for probably the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're basically like his people, his attorneys, like, let's see, where's it at? They're like, this is just dredging old stuff. As he says, the new indictment is essentially do over, and this is old stuff.
Sorry, we do know we're talking about limitations on that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there is also something called double jeopardy here in the U.S.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. He would, and that only works for if you're declared innocent the first time, and he wasn't. Technically, he was not declared innocent the first time, and we'll get to that in a second, but again.
Yeah, and he says, we do know what we're talking about in ancient conduct and about ancient facts. Now, it's 15, 20 years ago. It's not that old.
Mm. Yeah.
Especially for a guy that's much older than that.
Mm-hmm. So, for those who want to know, apparently it was announced yesterday his lawyers are asking the judge to give him house arrest.
Shocking.
Yeah, the federal prosecutor is trying to argue against granting him bail because he's a big flight risk because he has the money to flee for good.
Mm-hmm.
Which their lawyer's like, the risk of flight is dramatically overstated.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, sure. The guy with the amount of money he has. He could
and his own flee. Island.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He could flee and be gone for good. Yeah. But yeah.
And, really
awful shit. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hundreds of women. Mm-hmm. Or girls.
Yeah. Like teenagers, 16 year olds.
Yeah.
Some younger than that.
Paying hundreds of dollars at a time for them.
It's horrible.
Yeah. And so you're thinking, okay, so this dude went to trial for this once already. How is he, like, still out and about? Well, the reason is because of our now former Secretary of Labor, Alex Acosta. Way back in 2008, Alex Acosta went behind okay, so Alex Acosta was technically the prosecutor for that case, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was not defense. He was the prosecutor, which meant that he had been talking with all of these witnesses and, you know, some of Epstein's own victims who had come forth to testify against him. And then Alex Acosta went behind their backs and got the lightest plea deal he could have gotten for Epstein. Didn't he told none of the victims, none of their families.
Because they would have fucking crucified him.
Yeah. And because of that, Jeffrey Epstein ended up getting, what was it, like a something month prison sentence. But here's the thing. It was basically club fed, and it was one of those prisons where you basically can serve it on your own time at your own leisure. Hmm. Basically, he could go away and then, you know, stay in prison for a night and then go away for like a whole week and then come back. It's that shit.
Yeah.
And so once Epstein was arrested against this week, people suddenly remembered, oh yeah, this guy got that sweetheart plea deal from our current Secretary of Labor. And of course, Alex Acosta had to come out on public television and try and explain his conduct. And then
how did that go?
About as much as you'd think it would.
Badly.
And so basically it was announced sort of informally this early today that he was resigning from his position.
Yeah.
Probably a position he shouldn't have had in the first place.
There's a lot of people in the Trump administration who shouldn't have had their positions in the first place.
Like Trump.
Yeah. Acosta is just one of them. Mm.
The line starts with Trump and goes around the block three times.
Yeah, the statement Trump said on the wherever they were doing this outside the White House said, "Thought he did a fantastic job. He explained it. He made a deal people are happy with. Now they're not. In so many ways, I hate what he's saying now because we're going to miss him."
What?
And I think Acosta said, yeah, his quote here is, "I do not think it is right and fair to this administration's Labor Department to have Epstein as the focus rather than the incredible economy that we have today." Mm-hmm. And so I called the president this morning. I told him that I thought the right thing was to step aside.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Translation. Oh, shit. Things are getting hot.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, this incredible economy.
Yeah.
Have I mentioned how much I hate these people? Like every single goddamn one.
You know, it bears repeating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we kept asking ourselves, how low could we possibly go? And now we have child rape.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so we've hit the bottom. Like, there really is no farther way down. That's it. That is, you cannot scrape the bottom of the metal. Well, I'm sure they can find
something. Hmm. Oh.
But, yeah, goddamn.
They'll find something.
Yeah. This is a story that's going to play out in the coming weeks, and I'm pretty sure once that his journals and notebooks go out into the public, there's going to be a bit of a whirlpool effect, and we're going to find out a lot of very powerful people have been in cahoots with this guy.
Yeah.
And not necessarily just the people you think it would be.
Nope.
Because again, this guy had a very wide ranging clientele.
Very well connected.
Yeah. And part of the reason, and I think part of the reason why those photos that we mentioned earlier were so easy to get a hold of is because Epstein was so like full of himself, he thought he was invincible. Like he's that kind of person.
I mean, yeah, you keep the evidence on hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll just find out who the like political and business elite are based on who he has dirt on.
Yep. That's going to be up there with the Watergate scandal, I think.
Yeah.
When like the full scope of this comes to light.
Yeah. And it won't just be Republicans either.
Yeah, no, it's not going to be just Republicans. It's going to be a lot of Democrats as well, and it's going to be a lot of business people and a lot of entertainers. It's going to have a ripple effect on just pretty much all of American culture.
Yep.
But anyway, so now we go on from that to our heroes of the week. Our heroes of the week is, well, okay, so really our heroes of the week should be the U.S. women's soccer national soccer team, who won the Women's World Cup this week. But specifically, we're talking about a specific Fox News broadcast at a French bar. So this was before the championships. This is when they went up against France.
Well, this was after they won.
Oh, it was after they won? Okay.
Yeah.
My timeline.
This was a couple days ago.
All right. So it was after they won. And, of course, you know, this is, like, record-breaking because this is the fourth time that they've won.
Four games in a row, they basically just won the tournament.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, we're going to talk – we could also talk about stuff like, pay and stuff like that, but that's for another time. Anyway, so Fox News, of course, they were going to film some celebratory footage, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they went to this bar in – I guess it was in Paris?
Yeah, Lyon.
In Lyon, okay. And this bar was very full of, like, American expats, you know, people who – or maybe, you know, they were – people who had just traveled there because they followed the team. It had been a little bit of both.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're all English speakers, in other words. Mm-hmm. And so Fox News is there, and he's like, all of them are celebrating. And then somebody lets one of them or a couple of them know that this is a Fox News team. So suddenly they all start cheering fuck Trump, like very, very loudly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I love the Fox News commentator there. He's like, before he has a whiff of what's going on, he like draws the crowd in to say, hey, listen to what the crowd is saying.
Yeah.
Oh. It's like, oh, we were supposed to be over here away from the crowd, but we decided to be over here.
Yeah.
And they don't cut away.
Nope.
They don't cut away. In fact, he then tries to get a short interview with the guy who starts the whole chant to begin with.
Yeah.
And I don't think he even realizes it.
No.
Which, by the way, if you watch the footage, it's him because he's the one who starts it. Mm. But he somehow manages to interview that same person shortly afterwards.
Magnificent.
Oh, my God.
Well, this is about the level of competency we expect from Fox News. So.
Yeah, and then, he said, this is what really represents America. We got to get that racist out of the White House, et cetera, et cetera. People started chanting Democrats, Democrats, USA Democrats, stuff like that.
Oh, my God. That's just great.
Yeah. And, Trump saw it all because he watches Fox News.
Like, yeah.
Really well, awesome. We do know he saw it all because he basically went ballistic on Twitter afterwards.
Of course he did.
I mean, he didn't mention it explicitly, but he was obviously in a very bad mood. That's just there's egg on your face, and then there's like taking the egg, scrambling them, then putting into like a deviled egg container, and then putting little
up his butt.
Yeah. So yes, that was very sweet, and yes, because if you remember. Wright was kind of salty with the U.S. women's national team because, one of their very prominent players was very outspoken about her views on the current administration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Megan Rapinoe.
Mm-hmm.
And also there was a lot of sexism in regards to the celebrations they had during the games.
Yeah.
People that are, not exactly hiding the fact that they're mad that these women are, celebrating their victories, their goals, in ways that are very kind of confident that how good they are.
Yeah. And also, the fact that Megan Rapinoe is openly gay is probably.
Yeah.
Did I mention she's also going to be in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue?
Mm. She should be.
She is. Mm.
Yeah.
That was nice.
I also saw there was a meeting of the Chastains with Jessica and Brandi Chastain met up there.
Yep.
At the game.
Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun. So with that out of the way, it's now time to start the proper show proper, and unfortunately we have to say goodbye to the legendary character actor and theatrical personality, and I mean that in more ways than one.
Yes.
Mr. Rip Torn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the best names in show business.
I know.
Yeah.
Absolutely unmistakable voice.
Yep.
He has the distinction of being in some of both the best movies ever made and one of the worst movies ever made. Because he was in Freddy Got Fingered.
God.
No.
He plays Tom Crean's dad.
Oh dear.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That was not a good movie. Oh my God.
No, but if people who've started watching it now, years later, have sort of developed an appreciation for it, because it's basically a giant sort of Tom Crean prank as a film. But anyway, yeah, so obviously he was also in in Men in Black. He was also in just a lot of stuff, really.
RoboCop.
At least,
yeah.
stuff I want to. I swear.
Well, he did voice acting as well. He did like.
Oh yeah, he was a fairly prolific voice actor as well.
He was Zeus in freaking Hercules.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probably a lot of people have seen that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know him from the MIB movies.
Mm-hmm.
Or is Zed?
Yeah, he's Zed.
Mm-hmm. We're not hosting an intergalactic kegger here.
He had one of the best deadpan voices ever.
Oh my god, right?
He could somehow do that and pack so much emotion into it at the same time.
Mm.
Oh, there was another thing that Rip Torn liked to do, and that was drink.
Uh-huh. A lot.
And then get into cars.
Oh, well, that would be a problem.
Mm. Oh, there are so many police station videos of him getting thrown into the drunk tank. And just the weird shit he would do in there when he's just like blitzed off of his ass.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It's, you know, but he had a long, illustrious career, and his work will stay with us for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Including Freddy Got Fingered. So.
Yes. So it's funny. You know, I haven't watched that movie in, like, almost 20-some-odd years. And I watched it again recently a couple weeks ago. And I started to realize that if you pay attention enough to that movie, there are some very like obvious errors in there that are also completely intentionally left in. So like if you remember, like one of the most famous scenes in that movie is when, you know, Tom Green's like in a scuba suit in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad gets pissed off, and so he basically rips him out and throws him through the shower window. And then he steps out of the room, but what you notice is that at the last minute he ends up stepping to the side, and the reason is because he's trying to avoid the camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I will probably remember him for.
Hmm.
Well, that, and of course, Daddy, would you like some sausage? Daddy, would you like some sausages?
Oh, God.
That is the music you will hear before you enter hell.
So.
All right. So, R.I.P. Rip Torn. We hardly knew ye.
Hmm.
But anyway, next up. Now for something serious. So, you guys may have remembered a couple weeks ago, it was announced that Trump was planning a massive series of ICE raids across in like 10 major cities in the country.
Yeah.
And then I guess he ended up postponing them for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because the publicity was very negative.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're starting it up again they're giving it a second go around this time this weekend. So unless it gets called off at the last minute tomorrow, there are going to be ICE raids sweeping through the country in 10 major cities starting Sunday.
And San Francisco, LA, Houston, Denver, Miami, New Orleans, mm-hmm. New York, Baltimore, Chicago, and Atlanta.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I suspect there will probably also be riots in those 10 cities.
Mm-hmm.
Very soon.
Yeah.
And I want to also know that if you think you're a citizen, that doesn't necessarily mean you're safe.
Mm.
Because ICE has been caught in the past with rounding up people who are full-fledged American citizens,
mm-hmm.
but they either didn't have their paperwork on them or the ICE dudes just didn't believe they were actually citizens.
Yep.
So, if you are living in one of those cities, I would like you to get to know what your rights are. Remember that you do have rights, and ICE is not just they're not given carte
de
blanche. Yeah, they can't just do anything they want to you. You know, let's see if we can find, like, you know, it's like, you know, you have a right to, like, tell them, you know, like, you have a right to, like, an attorney, you know, they have rights that they have to read to you.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that legally, if you are caught, they can only hold you for 72 hours legally.
Really?
Unfortunately, unfortunately, what we've also seen, at least in the border in those camps, is that they've kept people for weeks, even months at a time before deporting them. You know, if you are afraid that you might get deported, try and get in contact with any relatives you might have in your country of, I guess I want to say origin. But then again, even if you were born in the United States, they've also been targeted by this shit.
Yeah.
So if worse comes to worse and you end up getting shipped back to, you know, a country that you haven't lived in or never lived in, you'll have someone who will take you in and, you know, take care of you while all this shit gets sorted out. And if all else fails, break shit.
Yeah, you know, the really ironic thing is that most of the people they're going to target are probably Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fucking indigenous. They were here on this continent before. Well,
okay, so here's the thing. I know what you're getting at. It is true, pretty much everything west of the Rio Grande was originally part of Mexico. But like, for example, like the quote unquote the caravan, and, you know, the refugees that are fleeing from South America, most of those people are either from, like, El Salvador or Honduras. They're not Mexican.
Yeah.
Not that, you know, these assholes are smart enough to realize that, apparently.
Point.
But, yeah, they, like I said, yeah, everything west of the Rio Grande was originally part of Mexico. So, yeah, it is true. There have been families that have been in that part of the country around when it was still – that have been around since it was still Mexico. So, yeah, it's bullshit. Mm-hmm. And it is rule by fear and terror, and it is the hallmark of all tyrants.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm hoping against all hope that he'll like get cold feet again and call it off tomorrow, because that's actually what happened the last time. Like, it was just hours before they were getting ready to start everything, and he pulls the plug at the last minute. Also, keep in mind that there are cities that, you know, those cities that are targeted, some of them have explicitly said that they are not going to
play ball.
Yeah, they're not going to cooperate.
Yep.
So, yeah. Again, the party that talks all the shit about states' rights really doesn't care about states' rights when it counts.
Yep.
Yeah.
Only when it's convenient to serve their agenda.
And that goes all the way back to the Confederacy, who really didn't give a shit about states' rights when states decided they didn't want to allow slavery in their state and or didn't want to return escaped slaves. But anyway.
Ungovernable.
All right, next up. R. Kelly's been arrested again.
This surprises you why?
It doesn't. Let's be honest. It was after that interview he did. It was only a matter of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but these are federal charges now.
Oh yeah, which means
yeah, this is the pound me up the ass prison type charges.
Oh yeah. Yes. And he is definitely going to get convicted on this shit. 6 feet
away from him.
Yep.
He is going to. Oh boy, he is going to pay, and he's going to pay hard, because he is a prolific sex offender.
Yeah,
he's going to find out why they call him hardened criminals.
Yeah, because remember, R. Kelly's been in the music business for a while.
Yeah,
30 years, as he was very apt to remind everyone during that interview he did with Gayle King. He actually, if you think about it now and think about his catalog of music, wow, he left so many clues.
Yeah.
Like, one of his most famous songs is literally called Age Ain't Nothing But a Number.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And as we've all found out now, the man is very manipulative. He's very abusive. He's extremely egotistical and narcissistic. And he is absolutely convinced of his own righteousness. And through using that, he has managed to collect himself a small harem of women that he has abused. It is almost certain that he abused Alia when she was a teenager. And it is also almost certain that, you know, his, you know, he's so manipulative. He, you know, a lot of his victims don't want to leave his side because he basically started a cult for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, once this goes to trial and like all the information comes out, much like with the Epstein shit, which, by the way, now that I think about it, I would not be surprised if R. Kelly was one of Epstein's clients.
It writes itself.
Yeah, it's like the timelines add up.
Of course it is.
But, yeah, so we'll see where that goes. Yeah. All right. So next up, we have another casualty from the Democratic nomination process. Eric Swalwell has officially dropped out from the presidential race.
Yeah.
And if you're like me and thinking, who?
The only one.
Yeah, he's the first one to drop.
Well, I mean, there was a couple others that were dropped before the debate started, but that was...
Well, they're still in the race. They're just...
Technically, they're still in the race, but...
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we're officially into the winnowing of phase of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah. Basically, the only thing this dude has to his name is that he became Diaper Boy Eric because somebody found him. It took footage of him when he was, you know, changing his, I think, his infant nephew, infant son, in a changing station in the men's bathroom, which, you know, fine. But that's about the only notoriety he gained.
Why would somebody fucking take a picture of someone doing that?
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
It is.
I don't know.
Jesus.
That's what I was fucked up is filming in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Seriously. Exactly, yeah.
Not for disrespect. Maybe they know each other. Who knows?
God in heaven. But, yeah. Yeah. Well, next up. That was one drop from the presidential race on the Dem side, but we gained a new one this week. Tom Steyer. If you know who Tom Steyer is, you've probably seen him in like one of the 80 billion commercials he put out during the run-up to basically just, let's see, where to begin? During the Russian investigation and, you know, all the other stuff, he put out like one commercial like every 3 months since Trump became president.
Yeah.
And he finally decided to just straight up stop wiggling around and put his hat in the ring. He has no chance of winning. And no. I'm sick of these billionaire douchebags getting into the race thinking they're entitled to win. But
yeah, I saw
get the benefit of watching them get massacred in the debates.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw some good tweets that are like, he's pledged to put $100 million into his campaign. People were like, you could better spend that money on tons of local races, state races, Senate seats, as well as whoever ends up winning the 2020 nomination.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that money could be way better spent than this fucking ego-stroking bullshit.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's a billionaire spending his money.
That's true.
You know, and
yeah, but one who supposedly cares about the Democratic race.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he should know better than know that he's not going to have a chance. Because the only thing you really have to his name is, you know, $1 billion.
Yeah, and a bunch of commercials.
Yeah. It's like, hey, you could partner with, you know, Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders or whoever, you know, help them out instead of fucking think you're the 25th guy and you're the one that can change things.
Yeah. Frankly, I think the Democratic race is going to go either Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren at this point, but it's still too early to tell.
Well, I wouldn't count Bernie out just yet.
No,
but,
I wouldn't either. But
I would not be surprised if he ends up getting the vice president part.
Yep.
Because you know, since Hillary's not in the race anymore, it means he's got much more of a profile this time around.
Yeah.
Yep.
When because the last election he was like a spoiler, or at least they considered him a spoiler.
Yeah,
he was a spoiler who turned the the primaries into an absolute slugfest.
Yeah. Yep. And he kind of managed to single-handedly change the national conversation pretty much all on his own.
Yeah.
Because he broke the big S-word taboo.
Yeah. Nope. Socialism is not a bad word anymore. At least it shouldn't be.
There are parts of the government and the media that are doing their absolute best to try and keep it that way. But they have failed miserably. In hindsight, if we were to like actually compare him to Phil, since you're Canadian, Bernie would be kind of considered pretty middle of the road in your country, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he kind of would. Yeah, if Bernie were probably running here, he'd probably be running as Liberal Dem. So
yeah, that's what I was thinking. Because Trudeau's, his policies aren't that too far off from what Bernie's are.
Nope.
I mean, with some exceptions, like foreign policy type stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I mean, if he was like running in like say Germany.
Hmm.
He'd probably be in like one of the liberal or like center right parties because that's just sort of how far to the right the Overton window in the United States is.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, he calls himself a socialist when his politics are pretty non-American.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I see mainstream, I mean like legit middle of the road type. The stuff he supposes is like so taken for granted outside of the United States that everyone outside of the world is looking. It's like, why haven't you voted for this guy yet?
Yeah, really? It's like, what's the problem with you people?
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of races, Mitch McConnell, arguably one of the most hated people in American politics.
Yeah.
I would say inarguably because I hate his guts and I want him to die, but he's getting a challenger again this time around for his seat in the Senate, and it is a Marine veteran by the name of Miss Amy McGrath. Again, and here's the thing, in the United States, having a military background is always like a big plus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like it immediately having any kind of history in the military gets you instant brownie points over here.
Yeah.
So she's already got a leg up.
Yeah, it means you've seen some shit and arguing with a bunch of white people is not a big deal.
Yeah.
It's the reason why, Pete Buttigieg, is kind of, even though he's still kind of middle range in the polls, he's gotten more attention. So
Okay, so so she is 44. How much older do you think Mitch McConnell is?
Probably twice that.
All right, she is 33 years younger than him.
Oh, I wasn't too far.
I was close.
77.
Mm. Yeah.
Plus, she has the added benefit of not looking like a turtle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she also has the benefit of being fresh blood.
Yeah.
Whereas Mitch McConnell is slowly turning to dust before our eyes.
Yeah.
Not fast enough.
No. You're right.
No, not fast enough. In fact, he really needs to get on with it, but...
Yeah, this Senate race upcoming is going to be very, very interesting. There's going to be a lot of it.
The whole election is going to be interesting because the 2020 election is going to be it's going to be one of the most eventful elections in American history.
Yeah.
Because people are going to I don't want it to happen, but I do expect some forms of political violence to happen during the election.
And especially after.
Yeah.
Because I still, and I don't want anybody to take it for granted, because when November 2020 rolls around, everybody needs to go out and vote.
Yep.
But he's not going to be president after 2021.
Yeah.
Don't take that for granted. Possibility is still there.
Yeah.
Got to do your part. End up
nominating Biden, for God's sakes. But anyway. All right. And now next up. From Tennessee. Why? Tennessee, why?
Why are you so, where you are?
Yeah, so there is in Tennessee, there is like a week of days that are set aside to honor veterans. And apparently by law, for some reason, at least a couple of those days have to be set aside for members of the Confederacy. And for whatever reason, He could have changed it to somebody else. I mean, everybody involved in fighting for the Confederacy was a fairly odious individual. But he picked probably the most odious of all of them. He picked a day to honor Nathan Bedford Forrest. Now, there's a couple of things about Nathan Bedford Forrest you need to know. The first one is him and his platoon committed one of the worst war crimes of the Civil War. It's known as the Fort Pillow Massacre, which happened again in Tennessee, in Memphis. Actually, it was 40 miles upriver from Memphis, so technically it may have taken place also in Mississippi. It's kind of like it's right on that line. It's like on the bluffs of the Mississippi River. Mm-hmm. He committed something known as the Fort Pillow Massacre, where him and his regiment rounded up all of the black Union soldiers that they could find and straight up murdered them. Like, mass murdered. Most by gunshot. Once they run out of ammunition, they started stabbing with bayonets. Once the bayonets had gone dull, they started hitting them over the head with the rifle butts.
Yeah. Classy individual.
In fact, Achilles Clark, who was a soldier with the 20th Tennessee Cavalry, actually wrote a letter to his sisters after the battle and then the massacre happened. He actually wrote this in a letter, and I'm quoting here. "The slaughter was awful. Words cannot describe the scene. The poor, deluded Negroes would run up to our men, fall upon their knees, and with uplifted hands, scream for mercy, but they were ordered to their feet and then shot down. The white men fared but little better. Their fort turned out to be a great slaughter pen. Blood, human blood, stewed out in pools, and brains could have been gathered up in any quantity."
Yeah.
Already, this guy is pretty big on the shit list of Confederate personalities.
Yeah.
But then he went one better. So, of course, afterwards, the war eventually ended. The Confederates lost. And so then it was time to start slowly readmitting the southern states back into the Union. And so first there had to be a segment of what we now in history call Reconstruction. And as you can imagine, the poor, well, I say poor, the former planter aristocracy and their supporters that had basically made up the leadership of the Confederacy were none too happy with these turns of events. And among them was a small group of college-age gentlemen in the 1867, got together and decided to form a little fraternity of sorts, a little costume fraternity where they would go out and play pranks on people dressed up all funny. Okay. And they decided to call themselves the Ku Klux Klan. And guess who they elected as their first Grand Wizard?
The guy
Nathan Bedford Forrest.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Yeah.
Now, oddly enough, he is also the guy who ultimately dissolved it. Because in around 1868, 1869, the Klan, amongst a huge number of white supremacist paramilitary groups, basically cut a swath of terror across the South against any freemen or their supporters or quote-unquote carpetbaggers and scalawags, which for those who don't know what a scalawag is, those were Southern Union men. And so he said, okay, I'm dissolving the organization. The robes are to be burned. Everybody has to be gone. He withdrew his position in the Klan. And then later years, he tried to sort of fix up his reputation by claiming he was never a member of the Klan. He decried and denounced the violence and racism of the organization and made at least one public speech to an all-black audience in favor of racial harmony. Yeah.
That doesn't really work.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that's who they... Yeah.
I should also mention that one of my elderly aunts actually went to grade school at Nathan Bedford Forrest Elementary in North Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And I love a statement by Governor Bill Lee about this stuff. Mm-hmm. He said, I signed the bill because the law requires that I do that, and I haven't looked at changing that law. He declined to say whether he believes state law should be changed and no longer require the governor to issue such proclamations, or they have reservations about doing so. I haven't even looked at that law other than knowing I need to comply with it, so that's what I did. When we look at the law, then we'll see. Which seems like it's only an issue like a couple days a year, so we'll grin and bear it, and I won't do anything. Because I might lose voters.
Yep.
But yeah, their other Confederate holidays are January 19th, Robert E. Lee Day.
Mm-hmm.
June 3rd is Confederate Decoration Day, otherwise known as Confederate Memorial Day, and the birthday of Confederate President Jefferson Davis. The other three holidays that they are required to observe, Abraham Lincoln Day, February 12th, mm-hmm. Andrew Jackson Day on March 15th, and Veterans Day on November 11th. And the way that Forrest is described in their proclamation,
mm-hmm.
Quote, recognized military figure in American history and a native Tennessean.
Let's just be as vague as possible so we don't mention mm-hmm. all the horrible stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is amusing because later on they talk about how he was against removing the Forrest bus they had.
Mm-hmm.
There because it would be, quote, a mistake to whitewash history.
It's like the same goddamn argument.
Say he's just a recognized military figure in American history and a native Tennessean.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. Mm. There's a lot more history to that.
Yeah.
Should make that fully public.
Mm-hmm.
Require everybody to read Wikipedia articles and all this shit about him.
Mm. Mm.
I don't know who they're celebrating.
All right. Oh, boy. Yeah. Now going from that to Trump actually kind of doing – well, I want to – okay. So it needs to be pointed out. We've got the census coming up, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there was going to be a citizenship question to the 2020 census.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the court ruled – Supreme Court ruled, look, you guys aren't really giving a good enough explanation on why this is necessary. And also, you guys kind of sort of let slip on what your actual intention was with this shit. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to let you do this. And so Trump said, you know, for a little while, Trump was like, oh, fuck you, I'm going to do it anyway. Yeah.
Mm.
And then he had his little presser. Where he announced, no, we're just going to drop that from the census, but I am going to still get this information through the federal records.
Mm.
And I don't think he can actually do that, but...
No, not really.
Yeah, so once again...
Because if you could, that would kind of
defeat so much of the census. Winning!
Yeah, so he's dropped this, and, well, probably, I think the fact that all the census papers went into production mm-hmm. without it on there probably helped. Mm-hmm. Oh shit! Well, fuck.
Yeah,
and basically, he said that they're just going to have their people sort of work on getting citizen data from other agencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not going to matter in about 18 months anyway. So,
mm-hmm.
well, no, 12, 15 at this point.
All right. Yeah. Anyway, all right. Next up, and this is actually relating to what we were talking about earlier about the U.S. women's national team. Senate has actually introduced a bill that's going to actually halt federal funding for the 2026 World Cup until the U.S. women's national soccer team actually gets equal pay.
Yeah, and you might
you don't know, the women's team has done far better than the American team has, and yet they get paid less.
Hmm.
Yep. Do you want to guess which senator is the Democrat senator introduces?
Oh, probably AOC.
Mm-hmm. Senator.
No, senator. No.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Joe Manchin, the West Virginia Democrat.
Yep.
Who is basically a moderate Democrat.
No, he's a conservative Democrat.
All right.
He's very much Democrat, right-leaning. In name only.
Hmm. Yeah, but essentially he's like one of the last people you'd expect to push this sort of thing. Yeah.
Because he's got at least a small amount of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would prohibit the use of federal funds that would otherwise be provided to support host cities, local states, organizations, U.S. soccer, CONCACAF, and FIFA when U.S. hosts the Men's World Cup in 2026. It says a clear, unequitable pay between the U.S. men's and women's soccer teams is unacceptable. I'm glad the U.S. women's soccer team latest victory is causing public outcry. They're the best in the world and deserve to be paid accordingly.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'm not sure if they have the numbers as far as what they get paid. Let's see. Yeah, they say, let's see, if each team played and won 20 friendlies in a year, the women players will earn a maximum of $99,000, while the men would earn an average of $263,000.
Yeah, that's a bit of a gap.
Yeah. And it's like the ratings for the Women's World Cup were huge.
Yeah.
Like up over last time. Like, they're drawing audiences.
Yeah.
This isn't like, oh, nobody paid attention, and that's why they're not getting paid.
All right.
It's like they won 4 World Cups. The men have won nothing.
Yeah. I'm glad that it's putting pressure in the right place. So hopefully this.
I just wish it wasn't from this asshole.
Yeah, got to come from.
Then it has to go through Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, so the turtle will just probably turtle it. So
yeah. Yay! We got a new verb for Mitch McConnell. Turtling.
Yeah.
All right. Next up. Down to Mississippi, because they have to be assholes about just about everything. So everybody knows right now, faux meat and meat substitutes have been growing in popularity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, people have kind of sort of realized now, you know, the impact that animal agriculture, the factory farming and just raising animals for meat and stuff, the environmental impact it's having.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have sort of figured out that, you know, at least for the Western world, because in most of the world, having meat for every meal is actually pretty rare.
Yeah.
But they've realized that maybe we can kind of start, lessening our meat for a little, our meat intake a little bit, and try some of these faux meat and meat analogs that are coming out. And as the Impossible Company has shown, you can make, beef analogs that are so like beef that you wouldn't know unless someone told you.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mississippi stepped in and passed a new law that prevents Plesmates meat providers from calling them burgers.
Yeah, veggie burger or vegan hot dog. You can't either use burger or eat a hot dog.
No.
In the name for these things.
Land of the fucking free, aren't we?
Yep.
Sorry.
Proponents claim the law is necessary to avoid confusing customers, but given that the phrase veggie burger hasn't been especially confusing for customers this whole time, it certainly seems like an effort to keep alternatives to meat away from shoppers, which is basically what the executive director of the Plant-Based Foods Association, Michelle Simon, says. The plant-based meat alternative category it's on fire right now with consumers demanding healthier, more sustainable options. This law, along with similar laws in several other states, is the meat lobby's response.
Yeah, how much you want to, the Beef Council and stuff got involved
and big beef.
Got this law passed.
Big beef.
Oh, geez, yeah.
It totally happened.
Big beef and big wieners.
Yeah. You're laughing, but that's really the truth is... The meat lobby started to realize how much of a challenge this was to their place in the market and decided to, do what a lot of these
fast food basically taking them on.
Yeah, basically what a lot of these happens when these newer markets come in and start challenging the older established markets. Like, this is the reason, this is one of the reasons, say, why the internet sucks so much here in this country. Because, the big communication companies basically carved out territory that they controlled so that they never had to compete with each other.
Mm.
Yeah. And That's why there's usually only like one internet service provider that's applicable to your state.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I swear.
Did you ever see Arby's like throwing a fit about plant-based meat, like saying they're never going to do that?
No.
Yeah, they'll do it as long as what's the money's there, they'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They got a new marketing thing that's going on. It's like, you know, the whole thing, we have the meats.
Yeah.
And they were joking
that sort of predates.
Yeah,
this.
But it just oddly fits, like, keeping that going on.
Yeah.
And, like, joking about we're going to have meat-based plants. Like, joking about having carrots that are actually made of meat. That sort of stuff. Like, a very, like, right-wing marketing campaign.
Who's their marketing director? Because they need to be fired. Because that doesn't even make sense.
It's called The Merit. I'm looking at this article. A meat carrot made of turkey breast sliced into the shape of a carrot is then sous vide for an hour and rubbed down in a special carrot marinade made of dried carrot juice powder. It's then topped with maple syrup powder, oven roasted for an hour, and topped with the parsley to give it the full carrot effect.
Actually, that sounds kind of awesome.
I
also claim it's
now.
Healthy, too. Has 70% of the recommended daily dose of vitamin A and more than 30 grams of protein. Plant-based meats are the latest incarnation of making vegetables look like what Americans really want, which is great, tasty meat.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're getting popularity. Do what they can to stop it, I guess.
We want to continue to innovate in the space of meat craft that never existed before in ways that are surprising and delicious and exceed the expectations of what you can get through a drive-thru.
Okay.
Which is very much like, well, we don't want to have vegetable meat because that doesn't fit our marketing campaign.
Well, you also have to remember Arby's in comparison to like all the other major fast foods is technically more of a sandwich shop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like it's more aligned with like Quiznos or Subway.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, they specifically focus on like, you know, roast beef and turkey and stuff like that. So
They
do offer chicken and fish, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they
but
do.
As long
very
as you're
chicken.
Not, yeah. And as long
now,
as you're not
their
ordering
chicken cordon
that,
bleu is to die for.
It is. But as long as you're ordering roast beef, you know you're going to be in and out of that drive-through like no time flat.
Yeah,
especially when they do those deals like $5 or $5, whatever it is.
That'd be $2 for $5 nowadays.
They could just do a freaking like 2 for 1 for like one of those large beef and cheddars, large curly fries. I'll be
barbecue.
Happy.
Yeah,
I'm gonna stop there because
it's too late.
It's too late.
We've crossed the line. We can't go back.
Yeah. All right. Well, next up,
I need to be Philly now.
Yeah. All right. So next up, so when people usually talk about the origins of humanity, it's usually theorized and agreed upon that humans, the Homo sapiens as we know of, more or less originate in the middle of Africa. And then after that, they sort of all spread out eventually came to fill out the rest of the world, including, of course, Europe. And we know that, you know, at least as far back as ancient Egypt, that there have been white people in or around Europe because there's old, like, papyrus that, you know, has images of the quote-unquote white barbarians. But there's a new study that finds that humans might have actually been in Europe way earlier than we thought they were originally.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, about 210,000 years ago, making the oldest human fossil yet found outside of Africa, which is what they found for, let's see, I think it was just called early humans.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if confirmed, the discovery would help clarify the earliest movements of our species as anatomically modern humans spread out of Africa. But not everyone's convinced by the strength of this new evidence. Yeah, as it typically does, like, gets peer-reviewed and all that.
Yeah.
People take a look at this, and they found, like, skull fragments up in Greece, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, they thought that this originally happened... when is it? I think it was 160,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So a good bit earlier.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty neat stuff. Definitely worth reading if you want to dive more into that stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of redefines the term old world a little bit.
No, I think it was like a couple year or so ago when they started, you know, doing DNA testing on Cheddar Man, you know, who's like that old preserved body that's, you know, they found in, well, they found in Cheddar in the UK. And they found out that, you know, he was actually fairly dark skinned.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Dennis Owen. Mm-hmm. That's what that was.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, there's.
And like people freaked out because it meant that, you know, there were non-white people in England before.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, obviously, it's bullshit to begin with because, you know, those people eventually just, you know, became lighter skinned. And those are the, a lot of those are the, some of the English we know today. But it basically undercuts the whole sort of white supremacist, you know, view of England as a white person's country, you know.
Yep.
And gee, you think the British Empire wasn't necessarily the only thing in Britain in the entire history of the world?
Yep.
All right. Well, so yeah, let's see. Next up. All right. Branson. Yes, Mr. Branson. He's got Virgin Galactic, which, of course, is his space tourism company. And he has announced that it is going to go public, which means now you can own a piece of stock.
Yep. Yeah.
Somebody, people are actually going to either be really, really rich or are going to lose their shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is all part of a merger deal that they're doing with Social Capital Head of Sophia, which is a special purpose acquisition company created by venture capitalist Chamath Palihapitiya. Butcher that. But yeah, they are going to be acquiring about $800 million for a 49% stake in the company, combined company, which is why it's going to be going public. They expect to have about $1.5 billion of enterprise value once they go public, which is pretty huge.
Yeah, I think that I'm not sure space tourism is something we should bet on quite yet.
No, but he's a billionaire, so he has nothing better to do.
Okay. Yeah, pretty much.
Think about space, trying to do things in space instead of fixing things down here. Because he's in a fight with Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and some others. It's like, hey guys, you could combine your wealth and more than solve a lot of problems down here.
Yeah.
But that's not good for their shareholders.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, making the world a better place is not good for shareholders.
Yeah. All right. So, next up. Obviously, Stranger Things 3 is out now. And a lot of people are trying to bring in, like, retro media shit to tie in with it. And Microsoft has gotten into the game because they released a Windows 1.11 app.
Yeah, this is actually brilliant. it's Windows 1.11 actually never existed, so this is just kind of a thing. But
also, like, Windows 1.0 was not a thing that many people used. So it's like a very weird nostalgia. Like, hey, here's a thing you probably never used because nobody used it. It was all Apple at the time, for the most part.
But Notepad works, sort of.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a game-like thing. You go through it, and there are glitches and all this stuff because it's something very wrong because it's tied to Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And so it goes through Paint and a bunch of other stuff in there.
Randomly crashed to DOS because that's what Windows did back then.
Yeah.
Yep.
And for such a weird version of the OS, it's 400 megs.
Yeah.
Pretty heavy for that. But yeah, it also just leads into promotions of Stranger Things. Yeah, like they call it, it's a version of like Windows 1.0 that's been taken over by the Upside Down from Stranger Things.
Yep. It's a lot of fun. It's on the Windows Store.
Sort of alongside that, they released some theme packs for Windows 10.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
If you want those, there's a 4K one and a Windows Throwback theme pack.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it also includes a link to go get Stranger Things 3, the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, they're doing some weird STEM camp stuff called Camp Nowhere. Yeah. That's tied into Stranger Things 3 as well. Yeah. For students 13 plus at Microsoft stores in the U.S.
Yeah, if you haven't visited a Microsoft store, I highly recommend it.
And I saw they put one in the UK, in London, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like right next, right near the Apple store there.
Yeah.
Yep, they usually put them very close
to each other, yeah.
Yep.
Although if you've seen the photos of this Microsoft store, the inside design is literally unbelievable. Yeah. It's hideous, but okay, go for it there, Microsoft.
Might be fitting for...
It probably makes sense in the UK, but let's just put it that way.
This is how we've always done it. Because we don't want anybody to be here. That's why we're Brexiting.
All right. Okay, so next up. And if you haven't figured out by now, we're in the entertainment portion of the show. okay, so next up, Warner Media. They have announced that they're actually starting a streaming service, HBO Max. And you're thinking, okay, so what is their, what's the carrot to this? What's the bait? They're going to have an exclusive for Friends.
Yep.
So bye-bye Friends on Netflix.
I'm not sure that's as big a draw as they kind of think it will be.
Well, it kind of is. Netflix is going to be losing, and people are like responding to their tweets about it. It's like, yeah, that's why I'm canceling it. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, sure. You can just buy the DVDs or Blu-rays and you have it forever.
Have them forever.
Watch it.
This
is going to launch spring of 2020. Say 10,000 hours of content, including all episodes of Friends.
Oh my God.
Let's see. They don't have pricing just yet. But this a new deal with Warner Brothers Television. HBO Max will have exclusive streaming rights that launch to all 236 episodes of Friends, which will be out of Netflix in 2020. Mm. Let's see. What else here? They announced new exclusive movie production deals for HBO Max with Greg Berlanti and Reese Witherspoon. Mm. They'll produce initial four movies. Berlanti will in the young adult genre, while Witherspoon's Hello Sunshine will produce at least two films for the service. And so they're kind of doing the service thing of, hey, we're getting a bunch of people working on stuff. Let's see. They'll include all episodes of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Pretty Little Liars, which is also going to be leaving Netflix. They'll be the exclusive streaming home for new Warner Brothers produced dramas for the CW, which includes DC Entertainment stuff like Batwoman, Katie Keene, which is a spinoff of Riverdale. CW shows going forward will be available on HBO Max beginning 30 days prior to the TV premiere of the next season of those shows. Okay.
So you can catch up. This is weird, because now they've got two.
Yeah.
Streaming services.
Well, they got HBO Now, HBO Go, and HBO Max.
So three.
Mm-hmm.
Three ways of getting some form of HBO stuff. But this is also going to have a bunch of, as they say, HBO combined with a slate of originals and programming from Warner Brothers, New Line, DC Entertainment, CNN, TNT, TBS, True TV, CW, Turner Classic Movies, Cartoon Network, Adult Swim, Crunchyroll, Rooster Teeth, and Looney Tunes.
Mm-hmm.
So they got a bunch of stuff.
But DC also has a streaming service, so...
Yeah, they'll keep their own stuff.
Yeah, this is a mess.
Yeah, this is the...
Also, fuck Warner Media, because I just found out something about that Mad Magazine closure from last week.
Yeah, yeah. They're responsible for it.
It's worse than that. They didn't even bother to tell the staff.
Yeah, what? I know.
Yeah. It's like one of the people I follow was Mad's writer Dick DiBartolo, and he may know the name. He found out about it by opening the New York Times.
That's not a good way to find out.
Nope.
Yeah.
Same goes for Al Jaffe, the guy that invented the fold-in.
Mm-hmm.
So fuck these people.
Yeah.
Seriously.
As for the HBO thing, my main takeaway from this is that there are actually people out there that are so white that Friends is the hill they're willing to die on.
I mean, yeah, it was a phenomenon in the 90s and early 2000s.
but it was sucky.
It was bad.
I mean, it's white people comedy. It's like, hey, we're white. We have problems.
Yeah.
Because I'm in love with my friend's sister and all this shit. I got an ex and she keeps bugging me.
Yeah. And for some reason. Yeah.
We're two weirdos that live together and we do weird shit because we're weird.
Yeah. You just pretty much summed up half the episodes of the show.
Yep.
Only half?
Yeah.
Only half. Yeah. The other half are usually someone having a baby.
Yeah.
Or yeah, there's
Ross
a
being a nerd.
Hmm.
There's the coffee shop where they do their white people stuff at.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. It's white people the show.
Yep.
Yeah. But all right. Next up, Netflix. Netflix has announced that they're working on an animated comedy series based on Cuphead.
Fuck yes.
I mean, let's be honest. If there is a game that can work for that, it is definitely Cuphead.
Yeah. I hope they go for the whole Tom and Jerry type of vibe for that show. I think that's one way to make that work. That's just me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. CJ Kettler, who worked on Carmen Sandiego's executive producing for this, which is a really good show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Series produced by Netflix Animation, executive produced by Emmy and Annie Award winner Dave Wasson, who did the Mickey Mouse shorts, I think the recent ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As well as Cosmo Sigerson, the most recent Rocko's Modern Life movie, is a co-executive producer. It's called The Cuphead Show.
Mm-hmm.
Exclamation point at the end.
Yeah, of course. Got to have the exclamation point.
yeah, which is being produced by King Features, which also owns the rights to popular comic properties such as Popeye, Garfield, and Archie.
King Features is pretty much the only comic strip game in town in the U.S. these days.
Yeah.
There used to be more, but they pretty much devoured all of the other ones.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're thinking like, you know, yeah, like, you know, or that, or like Blondie, or, you know, Dick Tracy, or Prince Valiant, Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers, all that stuff. Yeah, they own all of that.
It's all in the King Features now. So.
Yeah. The Phantom, Mandrake the Magician.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this. This sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. The fact that they actually have King Features involved means that they can also bring a lot of those older characters into it as well.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those, you know, those comic, you know, a lot of those comic characters eventually, you know, became cartoons in their own right. So, yeah. Next up, it was recently announced that David Fincher, you know, famous writer director, is directing a biopic of the co-writer for Citizen Kane, specifically for Netflix. Now, for those of you who are wondering, wait, there was a co-writer for Citizen Kane? Because when people think of Citizen Kane, who do they think of? It's Orson Welles, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he actually had a co-writer on Citizen Kane. His name was Herman J. Mankiewicz. And he was the guy – the reason he's sort of important is – well, for a couple reasons. For one, he was originally the – Berlin correspondent for the Chicago Tribune up until the point when the Nazis took over.
Mm-hmm.
He was also drama critic for the New York Times and the New Yorker. And he was involved in, of course, obviously the most famous picture he worked on was Citizen Kane. But he also worked on movies like he was one of the first screenwriters to work on what would become The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he's considered to be the reason why so much of that movie put so much aspect on the Kansas part, because his original treatment involved a lot of stuff happening in the Kansas pre-dream section.
Yeah.
He also was known as one of the first. Okay, so you guys know what punch ups are when in filmmaking is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Like a punch up, it's basically punch ups is when a studio says, look, we need to have more laughs for this picture, so let's get like a comedian or a comedy writer come in, see if they can, like Patton Oswalt, for example. He's actually a fairly common punch up person in the business.
I believe
it's one of the reasons why he's so wealthy.
Mm.
Well, Herman Mankiewicz became one of those people, and he's been involved in, he came involved in movies like Man of the World, Dinner at Eight, Pride of the Yankees, Pride of St. Louis. And there's like a slew of like 40 something films he worked on that he actually doesn't have written credit on, because he, again, he acted as a punch up. Hmm. And that was back in an era when they didn't, you know, credit punch up writers. Hmm. He was also, he was also very specific about what kind of picture he would write. For one thing, he really did not like Westerns, and he would not write for Westerns. And, you know, him being this kind of, I guess you can say, cantankerous, once got him in trouble with the studio heads, who basically punished him by putting him on working on a Ren-10-10 movie. And what he ended up doing is he turned in a script that, and I'm quoting from Wikipedia, began with the craven dog frightened by a mouse and reached its climax with a house on fire and the dog taking a baby into the flames.
Well,
yeah,
magnificent.
As you can probably guess, his movies were banned in Nazi Germany, especially Citizen Kane. Hmm. Apparently, Joseph Goebbels let the ministers of culture and propaganda tell them, "No movie that Mankiewicz has worked on is allowed to be filmed. Is allowed to be." Shown in the Reich. So
hell to the no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Zack Snyder. He is working on an anime, a Norse mythology anime, specifically for Netflix.
Yep.
Yeah, this might be something he's could actually genuinely be good at. So
yeah.
Yeah, he's working on this with Jay Oliva. Mm-hmm. Whom he also worked with on Justice League, Batman v Superman, 300, mm-hmm. and Man of Steel, so kind of just working with the same people.
Yeah.
But yeah, what, who else are we working with here?
Mm-hmm.
Not sure they say. Yeah, Snyder's going to be executive producer, also serve as showrunner and director. His wife and Wesley Coller will also produce. Okay, Stone Quarry Animation.
Mm-hmm.
The production company's newest venture with Oliva. Mm-hmm. I wonder who that is. I'm going to look it up. See who the hell they would. This might just be their first thing.
Yeah, this could be something that ends up working well for Snyder.
Yeah.
Norse
mythology, just as long as he stays far, far away from the DC universe.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I think his best work was probably when he worked with Frank Miller.
Yeah. Also, Sucker Punch, which I know I actually like, despite how unbelievably batshit and cheesy it is. Hmm. Yeah, also, don't let Frank Miller direct anything either, because that gave us The Spirit, and...
Yeah.
That gives you Samuel Jackson wearing a Nazi costume, so...
Yeah, that went well.
Yeah, Stone Quarry is Zack Snyder's production company.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just the animation wing of that.
Okay.
So we really know like what sort of to expect out of that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll wait and see.
Yeah, we'll wait and we will see.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, and finally, last story for the night. Disney is, of course, continuing in their long series of live-action remakes, except...
Quote-unquote live action.
Yeah, except this time, it's not really a remake. It's more of them kind of taking the original idea and going aboard. We got a teaser trailer for Disney's live-action version of Mulan. Now, Mulan is a story that goes back several centuries in China. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there were several film versions made before... You know, Disney decided to have the idea. Now, I love the original Disney movie. It is a great movie.
I think it was one of the first of the Disney animated that I skipped out on.
Yeah.
For no real reason, actually, just moved on.
Yeah. Apparently, and here's the thing. They've decided to go back to the drawing board on this one, and they have kind of embraced the Wuxia action parts of it.
Yeah.
And I'm digging it.
Yeah,
I gotta be honest.
It definitely seems less fantastical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it's like a Wuxia picture.
Yeah.
It's kind of fantastical is kind of the basic goes on.
But
yeah, so obviously like the dragon is not there.
Yeah.
The Eddie Murphy dragon.
Hmm.
I don't think it's going to be a musical either.
Yeah.
At least not from what they've shown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit of a departure from like what they just did with The Lion King, which was basically the exact same movie.
Yeah.
It just looks really, really good.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, I'm down for it.
Yeah.
These, so far, I mean, these, remakes that they've been doing and quote unquote live action, cause a lot of it is CG, they've been really hit and miss.
Yeah, it really depends. It kind of depends. Like some of them are okay. You know, I thought the Cinderella one was okay. Mm. The Lion King one looks pretty good.
Yeah.
The Aladdin one and the Dumbo one and the Beauty and the Beast one were meh.
Yeah. Very meh.
But the thing is, these movies make all the money. Disney still, and, you know, they don't really have to come up with anything new to make them. So when it comes to Disney and money, Disney will take the route of least resistance.
Yeah.
So,
which is you know, kind of surprising as what we're seeing here, which it looks like they're rethinking things a little bit and doing something different.
If you're looking for original from Disney, you're pretty much going to have to rely on Pixar.
Oh yeah, like a lot of their animated movies are based on, you know, fairy tales and such.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's always been Disney's sort of bread and butter.
Which is amusing because it means like anybody else can come along and make their version of The Little Mermaid or Cinderella or whatever.
Oh, God, they did. Hilarious. Mm-hmm. Back in the 90s, there used to be a bunch of companies that put out shit like that on video, specifically so they could, you know, trick the grandmas into getting the wrong movie for their kids.
Yeah.
You know, you had companies like, you know, like Bevanfield and Good Times and Dingo Pictures, you know, doing shit like that.
Yep.
That still happens today, too. So.
Oh, yeah, it still happens. Hmm. You got video over in Quato and Spark Plug Studios, people who do that shit.
Wasn't that long ago I worked in the electronics department at a Walmart. I sold plenty of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
Indeed.
Yeah. Indeed. So, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, something you just want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We'll have it linked to you on the show notes. Also, since iTunes is now officially dead and buried, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator or any place where, you know, you can hear my silky smooth oral chocolatey voice that can be downloaded and recorded for your listening pleasure. And now that is a sentence I have said, and it is in your head, and it is never going to leave.
It is canon.
Yeah. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Anolfo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Loge, and Teresa Samez, I like to say goodnight. 2020 stills cannot get here fast enough.